A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
A blunt knife is the most dangerous thing in a kitchen. Daniel's been testing that old saying with a foldable pocket utility knife during his DIY projects, and he's accumulated a whole stack of questions about what's actually happening at the edge. He wants to know the real difference between honing and sharpening. He's heard something about magnetism, straightening out microscopic deviations, which we'll get to. He's asking whether repeated sharpening eventually grinds a blade down to nothing, or whether the material removal is so tiny it doesn't matter over a normal lifetime. He wants to know if those small utility blades can even be sharpened, or if disposable replacements are the only real option once you go below a certain size. And he's after a no-gimmick toolkit and maintenance ritual for both kitchen knives and pocket-sized cutters. What to buy, how to test sharpness, how often to do each step.
So we went down the rabbit hole on edge geometry, steel removal rates, and the surprisingly deep world of pocket-sized sharpening jigs. And the magnetism thing, that myth is everywhere.
It is, and it's wrong, which makes it a perfect place to start. So let's start with the thing that trips everyone up, the difference between honing and sharpening, and why the magnetism myth won't die.
Honing doesn't use magnetism. There's no magnetic field involved in straightening a knife edge. What's actually happening is purely mechanical. When you cut, the very apex of the edge, we're talking about a wedge of steel that might be a few microns wide at the tip, experiences enormous compressive stress. Steel is hard, but at that scale, it's also ductile enough to deform. The edge doesn't chip off, it rolls over. It bends, like the tip of a wave curling before it breaks, except we're talking about deformations you need a microscope to see.
So the edge is still there, it's just folded.
Well, not exactly, but yes. Folded, rolled, bent to one side. A honing rod, whether it's smooth steel or ceramic, physically pushes that rolled edge back toward center. You're not removing material, you're realigning what's already there. The rod acts like a burnishing tool. Run the edge along it at the correct angle, and the pressure straightens out those microscopic bends. The magnetism idea probably comes from the fact that some honing rods are magnetic, but that's just to catch the tiny steel particles that come off during use so they don't end up in your food. It has nothing to do with the alignment mechanism.
So honing is basically telling the edge to stand up straight again.
That's actually a pretty good way to put it. Sharpening, by contrast, is abrasion. You're grinding away steel with a harder material. Typically, aluminum oxide or silicon carbide particles in a waterstone or diamond abrasive on a plate to create an entirely new edge bevel. You're cutting a fresh apex into the blade. That removes material. Honing removes nothing or close to nothing. Sharpening removes steel, period.
Which brings us to Daniel's lifespan question. If sharpening removes steel every time, is there a finite number of sharpenings before the blade is essentially gone?
To understand whether sharpening eats your blade, you have to understand what's happening at the edge at the microscopic level. And the short answer is yes, sharpening does eventually wear a blade down, but the numbers are so small that for a decent kitchen knife, you're looking at decades, not years.
Give me the numbers.
A typical sharpening session on a medium grit stone, say 1,000 grit, remove somewhere between 1 5,000ths of an inch of steel at the edge, depending on how much pressure you're using and how dull the blade was. Let's call it 3,000ths as a reasonable average. A standard chef's knife has a blade height, the distance from the cutting edge to the spine, of about 1/2 inch to a full inch. A Wusthof Classic chef's knife is around 60 millimeters, which is a bit over 2 inches.
So we're removing a layer thinner than a sheet of paper from a blade that's 2 inches tall.
Right. If you sharpen 4 times a year, which is more often than most home cooks actually do, and you remove 3/1,000ths each time, you're losing about 12/1,000ths of an inch per year. At that rate, it takes about 40 years to lose 1/2 inch of blade height. The knife will outlive you. The real limit isn't the steel disappearing, it's the blade geometry changing. As you grind away material from the edge, the blade gets shorter and the spine-to-edge angle gradually thickens behind the apex. Eventually, the knife becomes wedge-shaped and stops cutting well, even if there's plenty of steel left.
So the blade doesn't vanish. It just gets chunky.
Chunky is the technical term, yes. And that's where the difference between cheap stamp blades and forged knives really shows up. A thin-stamped utility blade, the kind Daniel's folding knife takes, is about 0.6 millimeters thick. That's roughly 24 thousandths of an inch. After 5 or 6 sharpenings, the edge geometry becomes too obtuse to cut effectively. The steel isn't gone, but the angle behind the apex is now so steep that you're trying to cut with a wedge instead of a blade.
Which is why the low end of the utility knife market just sells you packs of disposable blades.
The steel is so thin that sharpening is economically pointless. If a replacement blade costs 50 cents and takes 10 seconds to swap, and sharpening takes 5 minutes and only works 5 or 6 times before the geometry is ruined, you do the math. The manufacturer's calculation is that your time is worth more than the blade.
But Daniel also noticed that higher-end utility knives expect you to sharpen. So what changes when you move up?
Better steel, thicker stock, and a blade design that accounts for material removal. A high-end folding utility knife might use D2 tool steel or something in the VG10 family, steels with higher carbide content that hold an edge longer and can tolerate being ground back multiple times without the geometry falling apart. The blade might be a full millimeter thick instead of 0.6. That doesn't sound like much, but it nearly doubles the number of viable sharpenings before the edge angle becomes a problem.
So if sharpening is safe for big knives, what about the tiny blades Daniel is carrying in his pocket? Can you actually sharpen something that small?
You can. The challenge isn't the blade size, it's the bevel angle and the lack of a stable handle. Small utility blades typically have very acute edge angles, around 15 to 20 degrees per side. That's shallower than most kitchen knives, which run closer to 20 to 22 degrees. A shallower angle cuts more easily, but is harder to maintain consistently during sharpening, especially when the blade itself is only an inch or two long.
Because you've got nothing to hold on to.
Right. Freehand sharpening on a stone requires you to hold the blade at a consistent angle while moving it across the abrasive surface. With a full-size chef's knife, you've got a handle and several inches of blade to register against the stone. With the utility blade, your fingers are practically on top of the edge, and the blade is so short that any wobble in your wrist translates to a significant angle change at the apex.
So freehand sharpening a utility blade is possible, but miserable.
Possible but miserable is exactly right. The practical solution is a guided sharpening system, something that clamps the blade and uses a rod with a stone attached at a fixed pivot point to maintain a consistent angle. The WorkSharp Precision Adjust is the current top recommendation for this. It has a clamp that can hold blades as small as about half an inch, and the angle adjustment is precise enough to hit that 15 to 20 degree sweet spot consistently. The Lansky system is the older alternative. It's been around for decades and works on the same principle, but the clamp is less stable for very small blades.
And then there's the snap-off blade, which is a completely different approach.
Completely different technology. A snap-off blade is scored at regular intervals, usually every 8 or 10 millimeters. When the exposed segment gets dull, you snap it off with a pair of pliers or the built-in breaker on the knife body, and fresh edge is revealed. That's not sharpening, it's segment replacement. The blade is designed to be consumed. The steel is optimized for breaking cleanly along the score lines, not for holding an edge through multiple sharpening cycles. Different tool, different philosophy.
All right. So we've covered the physics, the lifespan, and the small blade problem. Let's get to the practical part. What tools should Daniel actually buy?
4 things. No gimmicks, no electric sharpeners that eat your blade, no pull-through carbide devices that rip steel off in chunks. First, a two-sided waterstone. The Serious Eats and Wirecutter consensus, and my own experience, points to the Shapton Pro 1000 Grit as the gold standard. It's splash and go, meaning you wet the surface and start sharpening. No soaking required. The King 1000 Grit Stone is the budget alternative. It's about half the price, but it needs 10 to 15 minutes of soaking before use, and it dishes out faster, meaning it wears unevenly and needs to be flattened more often.
Dish out, meaning the stone itself develops a hollow.
Yes. The abrasive particles wear away and the stone's surface becomes concave. You fix it with a flattening plate or by rubbing it on a flat concrete surface. The shaft dishes much more slowly because the binder that holds the abrasive particles together is harder.
So, Shepton is the buy once option.
For most home cooks, yes. The 1000 grit side does the actual sharpening. It cuts the new bevel. You want a 6000 grit side for polishing and refining that edge after the 1000 grit has done the heavy lifting. A combination stone gives you both in one. Second tool, a ceramic honing rod, not steel. Ceramic is harder than any kitchen knife steel, so it actually removes a tiny amount of material while realigning the edge. It's a hybrid, part honing, part micro-sharpening. A few strokes on a ceramic rod every 2 or 3 uses keeps the edge aligned and touch-up sharp between full sharpening sessions.
And steel rods are not useless, but not what you want.
A smooth steel rod, Onus, it realigns without removing material. That's fine for daily maintenance in a professional kitchen where you're sharpening weekly anyway. But for a home cook who sharpens every month or two, a ceramic rod does more useful work in the same motion. It extends the time between full sharpenings.
Add tool.
A guided sharpening system for the small blades. The WorkSharp Precision Adjust is about $60 and comes with a clamp, a rod, and a set of diamond plates from coarse to fine. The diamond abrasive cuts any steel, including the high carbide tool steels, in better utility blades. The angle adjustment is marked in 1-degree increments, which matters when you're trying to hit 17 degrees on a blade the size of a postage stamp.
And the fourth?
A leather strop with honing compound. This is what actually gives you a razor edge. After you've sharpened on the stone, even a 6000 grit stone, the edge still has a microscopic burr. A tiny wire edge of steel that's been pushed to one side by the abrasion. Stropping pulls that burr off and polishes the apex to a mirror finish. You load the leather with a green chromium oxide compound. It looks like a waxy crayon, and draw the blade across it, spine first, alternating sides. 10 or 15 strokes per side. The difference between a stropped edge and an unstropped edge is the difference between a knife that cuts and a knife that glides.
Glides? That's the word.
That's the word. And you can test it. The standard sharpness test is the paper test. Hold a sheet of printer paper by one corner and slice through it. A sharp blade cuts cleanly with no tearing and no snagging. If the blade catches or tears, it's dull. The kitchen gold standard is the tomato test. Slice a ripe tomato without supporting it with your other hand. If the blade bites into the skin without crushing the flesh, it's sharp. For utility blades, people use the arm hair test. Shave a small patch of arm hair. But that's subjective and frankly a little weird.
The BESS tester is the objective version.
Right. BESS stands for Brubaker Edge Sharpness Scale. It's a machine that measures the force in grams required to cut through a calibrated test medium, essentially a standardized piece of fine thread. A blade that cuts at under 200 grams of force is considered shaving sharp. A really well-sharpened kitchen knife might test at 100 to 150 grams. But that's lab equipment. It costs a few $100s and it's overkill for home use. The paper test and the tomato test are free and they work.
So what's the ritual? Daniel asks for a maintenance schedule.
4 steps, escalating in frequency and intensity. Step 1. After each use, rinse the blade and dry it immediately. Don't leave it in the sink. Don't put it in the dishwasher. Dishwasher detergent is abrasive and the heat can mess with the temper of the steel. Just wash, dry, put away. Step 2. Every 2 or 3 uses, 5 to 10 strokes on the ceramic honing rod. Hold the rod vertically with the tip on a cutting board, find your angle, about 20 degrees, and draw the blade down and across, alternating sides. This takes 30 seconds.
Step 3.
Every 1 to 2 months, or whenever the paper test fails, full sharpening session. Start on the 1000 grit stone, raise a burr on each side, you'll feel it with your thumb, a tiny lip of steel at the edge. Then move to the 6000 grit stone to polish. Finish on the strop with compound. The whole process takes maybe 15 minutes once you've practiced it a few times. Step 4, for utility blades specifically, strop after each use. It's quick and it keeps the edge aligned, and sharpen on the guided system when the blade fails the paper test. For a utility knife that sees heavy use, that might be every 2 to 4 weeks.
And if you're using snap-off blades, you just snap.
You snap and move on with your day. Different tool, different maintenance philosophy. The snap-off blade is designed to be disposable. Don't sharpen it. The steel isn't meant for it, and you'll just frustrate yourself.
So we've got the theory, the tools, the ritual. But theory is one thing. I want to hear from someone who actually had to keep a commercial kitchen running on sharp knives.
I know that look.
What look?
You're about to say something about Hilbert.
I'm not saying anything about Hilbert.
1983. I was 20 years old, and I worked the counter at a deli in Brooklyn that sliced pastrami all day. The head chef, man named Solmi, made me sharpen the entire knife block every Sunday morning. 12 knives. 1,000 grit stone and a leather strop. I hated it. Took me 2 hours, and my hands cramped up. But by the end of that summer, I could tell the difference between a knife that cuts and a knife that glides without even looking at the edge. You can feel it in the handle. The knife stops fighting you.
Sol had you using a stone and strop. That's sharpening. Did he have you honing during the week?
He called it honing. But the steel he used, it was diamond-coated. One of those DMT things, about 10 inches long, felt like sandpaper to the touch. He'd run the knives across it between orders and call it honing. It wasn't. It was micro-sharpening. Diamond abrasive removes steel. He was essentially doing a light sharpening pass every few hours and calling it maintenance.
So the terminology in professional kitchens is sloppy.
The terminology is whatever the chef says it is. Sol knew exactly what that diamond rod was doing to his edges. He just didn't care about the distinction. The knives stayed sharp, and that was the only thing that mattered.
What about utility knives? Did the deli have any?
For opening boxes. We had a stack of them in a drawer, the kind with the trapezoid blades you swap out. Sol never sharpened those. He bought them in boxes of 100. He said if it costs less than $1 to replace, your time is worth more than the blade. He was right. I did the math once. At minimum wage back then, the 5 minutes it'd take to sharpen a 50-cent blade cost more in labor than just throwing it away and snapping in a new one.
So the diamond-coated steel that blurs the line between honing and sharpening, is the distinction between the two more of a spectrum than a binary?
Depends who's paying for the steel.
Meaning?
If you're a home cook with a $200 chef's knife, you want to know exactly what your maintenance tool is doing to the edge. You want a smooth steel for honing and a stone for sharpening, and you want to keep those processes separate so you're not accidentally grinding away steel every time you touch up the edge. If you're a deli slicing 50 pounds of pastrami a day, you don't care about the distinction. You just want the knife to cut. The diamond rod gives you that, and if it wears the blade down faster, you replace the knife sooner. Sol budgeted for new knives every 2 years. It was a consumable, like the pastrami.
That's a completely different mental model. The home cook treats the knife as an heirloom. The commercial kitchen treats it as a tool with a service life.
The utility blade takes that to the extreme. Service life of one edge, then it's garbage. Sol's rule was simple. If the replacement costs less than the labor to sharpen, throw it away. He wasn't sentimental about steel. Most of the knives in that kitchen were Victorinox stamped blades, $40 each, replaceable. The only knife he really cared about was his personal chef's knife, a carbon steel Sabatier. That one he sharpened himself, on a Belgian cuticule stone he'd had for 30 years. He never let me touch it.
The ritual scales with the value of the blade.
With how much you care. Sol cared about one knife, the rest were just tools. He was practical about it. Most people sharpen more than they need to, and hone less than they should. If you hone properly, you'd sharpen maybe twice a year. But people let the edge go, then they have to grind it back, and that's when the steel really disappears.
He's right about that. The biggest variable in blade wear isn't the sharpening frequency, it's how dull you let the blade get between sharpenings. A blade that's only slightly dull needs maybe 10 light passes on a fine stone to restore the edge. A blade that's been used for 6 months without maintenance needs heavy grinding on a coarse stone to reestablish the bevel, and that removes 10 times as much material.
The maintenance ritual isn't just about keeping the knife sharp. It's about minimizing how much steel you lose over the life of the blade.
Frequent light touch-ups remove less total material than infrequent heavy sharpening sessions. The ceramic rod is the key. It does enough abrasive work to keep the edge from degrading to the point where you need a coarse stone.
The line between honing and sharpening is blurrier than we thought. What does that mean for the future of blade maintenance?
Two things are happening in parallel. On the material side, powder metallurgy steels with high carbide volumes. Think CPM, S30V, M3090, that family, hold an edge much longer than traditional steels, but they're also harder to sharpen. The carbides that give them wear resistance also resist abrasion from sharpening stones. That's pushing more consumers toward guided sharpening systems and diamond abrasives, because freehand sharpening on traditional water stones just takes too long with these super steels.
The steel gets better, but the sharpening gets harder.
Right. And on the other side, you've got the environmental argument against disposability. Those packs of 50 utility blades, they're not recyclable in practice. The steel is coated, often with titanium nitride or some other treatment, and they end up in landfills. Some manufacturers are starting to offer longer life utility blades that are specifically designed to be sharpened. Thicker stock, better steel, marketed as a sustainability play. Olfa has a line of this, and there are a few boutique makers doing it.
The economics might shift. If the blade costs $5 instead of 50 cents, sharpening starts to make sense again.
If the environmental cost gets priced in, through regulation or consumer preference, the whole calculus changes. The 50-cent disposable blade only makes economic sense because the disposal is free. Once you account for the landfill cost, the math tilts toward sharpenable blades, even at the small scale.
Which brings us back to Daniel's original question. Can you sharpen a pocket utility blade? Yes. Should you? It depends on the blade, the steel, and what your time is worth. But the tools exist, the technique is learnable, and the ritual, rinse, hone, sharpen, strop, works at every scale from a chef's knife to a box cutter.
The magnetism thing, we should say it one more time. Honing is mechanical, not magnetic. The rod pushes the edge back into alignment, no magnets involved.
Daniel's going to be disappointed. A magnetic knife sharpener sounds like something he'd want to build.
He can build one if he wants, it just won't do anything.
If you want to hear more about the weird prompts that keep us up at night, rate and review the show, or send us your own prompt. We might just build an episode around it.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently spent a summer sharpening pastrami knives and never mentioned it until now.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.